from the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast. This is Ag Day.
More planters are starting to roll.
They say April showers and May flowers and all that sort of stuff. That works really well for us too, as long as it showers and not storms.
We check in with farmers in Arkansas who are putting in soybeans.
So we're kind of seeing the death throes of this El Nino.
After El Nino comes La Nina. We'll break down the timing of this next weather pattern and the impact on producers. There's a new effort to stop California's Proposition 12 from going nationwide.
This issue is not going away.
What some in Congress are trying to do right now on Ag Day.
Ag Day, presented by Pioneer. What's next happens when blood, sweat, and tears meet rain, wind, and sun. Pioneer, what's next happens here.
Good morning, I'm Clinton Griffiths. The nation's pork producers are feeling the fallout of Proposition 12. The Supreme Court upheld the California law, which places production restrictions on pork that can be sold in the state. Now, Ag Day's Michelle Rook continues to follow the story. Michelle, you've talked to producers and congressional leaders. So what is the next step?
When the pork industry has exhausted all its legal options, so they're now calling on Congress to pass a national ban on states adopting their own production rules. Congress could include this in the new farm bill, and so they're increasing the pressure as the House Ag Committee prepares to release its first draft of the bill.
Prop 12 in California requires breeding pigs be confined to a pen with no less than 24 square feet of floor space. It's a huge blow to the nation's pork producers, especially when it comes to interstate commerce.
You have one state dictating what you have to do to sell product in their state. That's still a big deal, and it's still something that I don't think we want to deal with on a state-by-state basis.
Officials with the National Pork Producers Council say it also creates a dangerous precedent.
The scariest thing to us, of course, is a patchwork of state regulations. We already have a patchwork of two regulations with California Prop 12 and Massachusetts Q3. A product that's Q3 compliant isn't necessarily Prop 12 compliant, whereas Prop 12 compliant is Q3 compliant, so it's already a mess out there, and that's why we need Congress to take firm action.
Adams says they expect to see text in the House version of the Farm Bill to prevent states from regulating producers nationwide. In the Senate, the Eating Agricultural Trade Suppression, or EATS Act, has been introduced, but inclusion in the Farm Bill is unclear, according to Senate Ag Committee members at a recent Farm Bill listening session in South Dakota.
As a judiciary, Bork and hard jock, we can come on in this too. It's just trying to figure out a mechanism to deal with it. I was really disappointed with the Supreme Court, really.
We're going to have to figure out how to deal with it, and it may be that we have to fix it law. It very well could be a farm bill issue. I don't know if we could get consensus among some of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle in committee, but this issue is not going away.
Meanwhile, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack has testified to Congress that they need to address the issue or there will be market consequences. I'm Michelle Rook reporting for Ag Day.
All right, thanks, Michelle. There's now a 60% chance that La Nina will develop between June and August. That's according to NOAA's latest forecast. The agency still thinks there's an 85% chance La Nina will be in full effect by November until January. As we transition out of one of the strongest El Nino events on record since 1950, what does it mean for the U.S.? Farm Journal's Tyne Morgan explores just that.
The drought picture has drastically changed over the past 6 months. Nutrien Ag Solutions Senior Science Fellow Eric Snodgrass says there's no doubt El Nino has helped soften the drought.
Fall, we had 40% of the lower 48 in some form of drought. Now it's down about 18%.
Meteorologists say El Nino peaked in December, but the ripple effects are still being felt now.
Even though we've long since passed the peak of El Nino, we still see a weather pattern that is very consistent with what you would expect to see during El Nino. So we're kind of seeing the death throes of this El Nino. A lot of southern track storms coming in through California.
And as El Nino now fades, La Nina is knocking at the door.
I feel like the transition to La Nina is already underway. The thing about that is that the impacts often are not felt for many months.
Rippey says just like the impacts of El Nino are still being felt 4 months after its peak, the claws of La Nina may not come until fall.
Even if we make that transition into La Nina by, say, summertime, we're likely not to feel the impacts of La Nina until we get into the autumn of 2024. So that's good news for the growing season.
Snodgrass says the transition to La Nina is so hard to predict because of something atmospheric scientists call the spring forecast barrier.
And what we found is that our ability to predict well how El Nino is going to transition before you get through the month of May is pretty bad. Once we get into May and start to pay attention to those ocean temperature changes, we'll be much better at predicting it, and a lot rides on it.
In the past, El Nino to La Nina transitions. Snodgrass says it's created a drought scenario somewhere in the Cotton Belt. And while the summer moisture scenario may be hard to forecast at this point, Snodgrass says he's confident about one thing. It could be a hot summer.
I do think one thing about this summer, and that is I'm expecting warmer than average temperatures. Most of that coming in warmer overnight lows, though, based on what I know now. And a lot of that is predicated on the collapse of El Nino to neutral conditions and eventually into La Nina.
All right, thanks, Stein. And here's a look at the latest drought monitor. It shows dryness and drought expanded in the central and southern plains, while there's extreme drought in areas of Idaho and Montana due to a lack of snow. But drought conditions continue to improve in the Midwest. Just under 18% of the nation is in some sort of drought. Last year at this time, about 25% of the nation was impacted by drought. The southern plains could see some rain, while the central high plains could actually see some snow. Meteorologist Matt Engelbrecht has a look ahead.
Yeah, can't really fight off that cold air, at least that snow-inducing cold air in and across parts of the nation. Now, this is Friday at 3 p.m. And when we talk snow, you got Minnesota and then watch over here towards Montana is where we could get, again, some more snow, of course, into Colorado as well, the higher terrain that could spread back to the east. Now, this is Saturday at 5 a.m. There's not a lot of moisture to work with, but there is going to be enough cold air, not only here, but you can kind of see where the dry air is located Saturday at 5 a.m. as there's a lack of cloud cover and any kind of precipitation, whether snow or rain, will be relatively light. Now, we talked about this a few days ago, that it's going to be kind of split across the nation. You got dry, cold air back up here to the north, and then check out the cloud cover, but also the moisture coming together for a soaking weekend in through parts of Texas, Louisiana, and all the way in to the southeast. And go ahead and take a look at your screen here. Some of you are still sharing pictures with us of your favorite farm dog, Jolene. Jolene of Minnesota sharing this picture of her dog, Cash. Johnny Cash? She says he is very protective of her and always loves to go for rides and hang out. Sounds like Cash is a very good boy. I'll have more on your forecast coming up.
Export sales of soybeans were up this week, but the markets really didn't seem to care. We'll talk markets coming up next. And later, planting season is rolling in Arkansas. We'll check in on how the season is faring so far in the country. The Rural Main Street Index sank for an eighth straight month. The Creighton University survey of rural bankers coming in at a reading in April of 45.8. That's up from March's reading, but still below a reading of 50, representing growth neutral. Ernie Goss, who leads the survey, says higher interest rates, weaker ag commodity prices, and higher grain storage costs push the overall reading below growth neutral yet again. And rural bankers remain very pessimistic about economic growth in their area over the next 6 months. A bit of good news. Even with weaker farm conditions, less than 1% of bankers reported an uptick in farm loan delinquencies over the past 6 months. USDA reported soybean export sales that were up almost 60% from the previous week, along with a flash sale of soybean cake to the Philippines. But they weren't enough to pull beans up on Thursday. Michelle Rook dives into the markets and markets now.
Grains ending mixed on Thursday with row crops lower. Wheat to the plus side. Arlen Suderman with StoneX is joining us. Arlen, let's talk about soybeans first off. New lows for the move. Boy, we've just been continuing to see what? South American hedge pressure?
Yeah, we have. You look at Brazil, and they're expected to export over a half billion bushels of soybeans this month alone. So the flow of soybeans coming out of Brazil is as strong as ever right now. And we're feeling that pressure of the farmer letting go of the soybeans, moving to the reseller, moving to the exporter, and then moving out to the ocean, to China and other places. It's been hurting our business. It's slowing our export sales. We did see some export sales this morning to China, but it was primarily stuff that had already been sold to unknown destinations, and they simply changed the shipping address on it to China.
And corn and soybeans kind of went down together, and we're down testing some pretty key areas here. Do you think we're going to go back and take out those contract lows in soybeans or not?
Yeah, that's a concern. Those late February lows have been an area where we bounced off of, and can we hold that? If we look at the lead May contract, we're just a few cents away from it now. On the continuation charts, we're a little bit further away, about 15 or 20 cents away. But the charts are looking like we want to go back and test those areas, and will they hold? A lot of times double bottoms do not hold. Double bottoms do hold, but if we bounce and then try it again at triple bottoms, oftentimes do not hold. So we need to be able to hold that level of support if we're going to be able to bounce off of this. The problem is we just don't have a story right now. We're getting good rains across the Midwest to help fill the soil profile. We still do have some dry areas, but overall the market is assuming we've got a good crop coming.
Wheat market was able to bounce despite some China export cancellations. Why?
We've got some dryness in the plains. We've been having dust storms, and Kansas has been missing out on those rains. Kansas, eastern Colorado, parts of Oklahoma and Texas. And that's providing support. Not enough to sustain a rally, but it certainly gets bought on the dips.
Okay, thanks for joining us. That's Erlen Suderman with StoneX. We'll have more Ag Day coming up.
Contact Erlen Suderman by email at erlen.suderman@stonex.com.
I want to go ahead and jump ahead into our Sunday and take a good long look at what's going on in the jet stream. Not necessarily this weekend, but next week. So we got that low pressure system, the trough, working out towards the East Coast by Sunday. And you remember earlier, that is going to leave behind some dry and if not cool air in and across a good portion of the United States. We'll have another weak system try to come through here. You can see that bowling ball type feature, that circle, another trough. We'll call it a clipper system working through the jet stream. This is Monday, Tuesday, and into Wednesday. Very shallow. You see how this line only cuts through parts of Illinois and into Wisconsin. If we're talking big expansive systems, which includes severe weather and widespread rain, this trough would have to dig all the way down here to the south to pick up that moisture. Since this is going to be coming through an already pretty dry atmosphere, it's not going to have a lot of moisture to work with. That does not mean it's a dry forecast on Tuesday and Wednesday. Where this trough, the shallow trough, we'll call it a shortwave trough, comes to the United States, we could get increasing cloudiness as well as some isolated thunderstorms. But this isn't one of those systems where we're going to get widespread severe weather. It is worth monitoring if things change and this digs a little bit deeper to the south. So that's the jet stream on Tuesday. What you don't see is that cold air pooling in behind it. It's just not strong enough. So instead, a ridge, the lines going up here to the north, will start to take shape. This is good news for anybody that wants to avoid thunderstorms, widespread rain, as well as even winds are going to be difficult to translate all the way down to the surface with this kind of jet stream shaping up. So a ridge of high pressure builds in as early as Wednesday and lasts through our Thursday, Friday, also bit into our Saturday. That next kicker is going to be right back up here towards the top left corner of your screen. Could be in here as we go into next week. There's a look at the wind gust forecast for Friday at 4 p.m. Notice the weekend stays a little windy in and across the United States before starting to weaken, if not calm, into Tuesday and Wednesday. Of course, not completely calm, but Sunday at 7 p.m. already starting to see the signs of maybe a ridge trying to form in and across the United States. Start off with Colorado. We got some evening showers, maybe some snowflakes mixed in the higher you are. High about 48 degrees, low of about 32 degrees. Zoe, Kentucky, AM thunderstorms, high around 66 degrees, low of 43. Zook's Corner, Pennsylvania, cloudy, high of 62.
Up next, smart farming with smart firmers. We'll take a look at the latest planting technology coming up next. And later, planters are rolling and farmers in Arkansas are putting a crop in at a tremendous pace. We'll take a ride in the country. Smart farming with an even smarter seed firmer. Precision Planting is taking the technology first developed in the 1990s a step further, developing sensing technology deep into the furrow. The firmer's optics can sense soil moisture and temperature along with organic matter and planting depth, and then transmit all of that in real time to an in-cab monitor. Smart Firmer can also be set up with FurrowJet for in-furrow at plant liquid pop-up applications. A 2019 farm trial on the seed firmer conducted by Precision Planting claims to have shown a 3 bushel per acre advantage over planting without a firmer. And a new era of robots could one day be working on the farm. Check out the latest robot from Boston Dynamics. It's a humanoid robot named Atlas. The company says it is designed for, quote, real-world applications. Boston Dynamics says it's retiring its hydraulic Atlas for this fully electric robot. And it says the electric version will be stronger with a broader range of motion. For example, it says the previous version could lift and maneuver a wide variety of heavy and irregular objects. And now they're exploring several new gripper variations on this robot for customers. The company's partnering with Hyundai to test Atlas applications over the next few years. Boston Dynamics robots work in industry and with police departments. Now, so far, robots are not planting our row crops. And in Arkansas, farmers are making quick work of the job. We're headed there for a check on progress next. Planting is in full swing across several states, including Arkansas. The latest crop progress report from USDA shows that Arkansas is 26% planted when it comes to soybeans, which is a whopping 18% ahead of the 5-year average. But corn planting hasn't even started. Now, the Arkansas Farm Bureau recently hopped in the planter with one farmer in Conway County to check out his progress.
We're planting some soybeans in the south part of Conway County, about a mile and a half north of Pettigean Mountain. This is my 41st planting of crops. It'll be my family's 73rd. We're planting in some pretty good conditions today. Moisture's good, 35 to 40%. Planter's going and it's not making any warning sounds. Soil temperature showing to be high 60s, low 70s. We elected not to plant any corn this year, and so we planted some early soybeans. We've got about 450 acres in and that are coming up that we planted before this last rain. We got about 3-inch rainfall. I hope they look like they're going to make it, but anytime you get that much rain on freshly planted beans, you can have a problem. And then I've planted about another 200 or so. So that puts us somewhere around 18% soybean planted. We're gonna plant some rice, but we're having trouble. We were a little bit wet before the last rain and we're just not quite dried out enough today so far to plant any rice. They say April showers and May flowers and all that sort of stuff. That works really well for us too. As long as it showers, not storms. It seems like in the last few years we've had much more erratic types of rainfall. It usually comes in buckets and instead of thimbles. And this time of year, what you'd like to see is just a steady progression in the temperature, bright sunshiny days, rainfall, you know, every week would be great, but not anything real big. You just want to keep the top of the soil, you know, the upper 6 inches topped off in moisture so you can work it and get the seeds planted. I know I'm like any other farmer in the world. There's always something I can complain about, and usually it's the weatherman. We depend on a lot of predictions, long range, short range, historical data and everything else to make decisions along with the markets. And sometimes it's a little bit of a brain strain. But this machine is capable of planting up to 10 miles an hour, and I'll just roll it up there. The tractor itself is, I just set the throttle wide open, and it's got an automatic variable transmission that it picks its own gears, and it makes all those decisions multiple times a second. It wasn't about 50 years ago that I was that monitor. Now, I couldn't do anywhere near the things that this monitor could do, but boy, if I let one of those seed units, planter units get stopped up with a dirt clod or a chain come off or something like that, Dad would make sure that I got repaired.
That's funny.
Our hopes for the year is to just make a good crop. You know, that's what all farmers want. They want to grow stuff and make a living doing it, and that's what we want. The economics right now are pretty tough.
And our thanks to the Arkansas Farm Bureau for sharing that update with us. And that's all the time we have this morning. We're sure glad you tuned in. From all of us here at Ag Day, I'm Clinton Grimes. Have a great day.